You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
People might think that my Munster hat is too Munster. Got to get into a position where we're rewarding form as opposed to credit in the bank.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
We are looking ahead to the Republic of Ireland against Portugal in their World Cup qualification match this Thursday night. Delighted to welcome Shane Keegan back to the show. Good morning, Shane.
Morning, lads. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Let's get stuck into this straight away. Your confidence slash hope levels, are they still at a high point given what happened away to Portugal, or is this script entirely ripped up and it's very much back to the drawing board of feeling a little bit precarious about the opposition we have this week?
Oh, look, I think you would have to be reasonably confident heading into it. I think we saw enough in that performance originally against Portugal. I know we were undone by that man again at the death, but it was a very, very impressive performance for the vast majority of the game, no doubt about it. And then I suppose you look back at the two most recent games, and that's certainly helped optimism build even further. And you can see why all of a sudden there's a very, very different narrative around this team. Now it takes very, very little for that narrative to change again, that's for sure. Like, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Portugal are an extremely good side. They're capable of hammering. Manny's a good team. If Ireland had a very poor result here and then followed it and then didn't beat Luxembourg, all of a sudden the narrative completely and utterly flips. But at this moment in time, it's hard to see that happen because the team seemed to be in a good place. And the confidence, I suppose, to be honest with you, the confidence I think that they've kind of always had. Now, results will eat away at that, but you have to admire how they have continually come out and backed what the team are trying to do and backed Stephen Kenny and backed themselves as players. And that confidence that they've kind of always had now seems to be shared by a large percentage of the fan base as well.
Do you expect there to be a difference to the system that Stephen Kenny will employ at home to Portugal than the one he employed away from home?
No, I don't. And when you say system, I suppose it's important that people kind of realise that when we talk about the system now, we're not necessarily talking about a change in shape. Stephen Kenny can use the exact same shape, but extremely, extremely different game plans. The shape, I think, will stay very, very much the same. And I also think the game plan will stay very much the same, which is what we got the last time. It's also, by the way, what we got against Azerbaijan, which is sitting off, allowing the opposition to have the ball to a certain extent, certainly into as far as the middle part of the field. I don't think we'll sit on the edge of the 18, but we will probably sit off. And the big thing that the last time round was protecting the middle zone of the field. The five central players will have their work cut out, but they did extremely, extremely good jobs the last time. Now, look, it's that saying that when you have a duvet that doesn't cover the whole bed, you have to give up certain parts of the field at any given time. And it does mean that we leave ourselves that little bit more open down the outsides. And as we've seen with Ronaldo's heading, it's so hard to keep tabs on him for 90 minutes. But I do agree that it's the right idea. Packing the centre of the field is definitely the way to go. And I won't say we'll completely play under attacker. We won't completely rely on set pieces. But I do think they are probably going to be our two main attacking threats in this one. But I think the side will be okay with that. I think you've got defenders who are very, very confident in their ability. Obviously, you look at the likes of a Shane Duffy, whose game has just completely and utterly turned around in the last 12 months. And Robidelli got, I think he got a full 90 minutes in the last game for Norwich and a good result. That's bound to bring his confidence on leaps and bounds. And John Egan just always looks like a really, really confident, solid player. And then in front of that, you know, they're working so, so hard that they'll try and give them as much protection as possible. And look, I'm sure we'll move on to the attacking side of things in a minute. But if we can get the defensive side of it right first, it'll put us in with a decent chance.
Yeah, we will get onto the attacking side of things. Just a couple of things there that you mentioned. You talk about covering the midfield areas. It did feel that in the first game, I'm not sure did Portugal get it wrong in that department, Shane, that they overloaded the attack, certainly, but it did feel that Ireland could, to a point, live with them in midfield, because I think it was like four attackers that they had on the pitch and two in midfield, and Ireland just had the extra man there for the night. So if they were to go with three traditional midfielders, so not Bruno Fernandes basically, and their two normal midfielders, do you think that Ireland could potentially struggle a little bit more in that department, or how do you see that potential change playing out?
Yeah, I actually, you're on the ball. I actually think the most interesting piece of team news on the night is going to be how they set up. I think we can be fairly nailed down with how we're going to go about it ourselves. But a big indicator of their intentions is going to be around that decision around Bruno Fernandes. But you can understand where they were coming from the last time. Obviously, he didn't have a great Euros, but they would have been looking at us and they would have been looking at our struggles, and they would have been thinking, right, there's no way, we need three central players here. We can sacrifice one of them for a more attacking player. And that did backfire on them on the night. We dealt with that extremely well. I don't know. I think it's really 50-50 as to whether they go with the two and a 10, or whether they go with the three in the middle of the field. I mean, how do you? I know United are struggling, but almost anything good that comes from United seems to come an awful lot from that Bruno Fernandes Ronaldo link ups again. So I don't know. I think they might start him again. And I do think that would suit Ireland again, because, you know, we've shown that we're able to deal with it. But I don't know. I just think the manager is going to look at Fernandes and maybe look, you know, if they're worth their salt at all, obviously what they'll have done is they'll have sat down in the performance analysis suite and they'll have gone through, right, what worked and what didn't work. And maybe he says, OK, rather than us changing system, we need to do what we were doing, but to a much higher level and to a much higher extent. And I you know, when I'm involved in football, I always love playing a team again shortly after you've played them, because it's a fantastic chance to, OK, here's what worked, here's what didn't work. Right, how are we going to do that differently? We know they like to do this, we know they like to do that. So, you know, if they've done a huge amount of analysis like that, maybe it's not a case of dropping Bruno Fernandes, it's just a case of trying to use him more cleverly, and that could give us a good test.
Shane, one of the things that's been a hallmark of the era so far is that Stephen Kenny hasn't really had everybody all available at the same time. There's been injuries, there's been COVID. This is one of those rare occasions where actually all of a sudden most of the central midfielders are available. And it's going to be very interesting to see exactly who he picks here, because, you know, he was very, very strong in his praise of Jeff Hendrick after the last game. But is Hendrick actually one of his first choice midfielders?
Yeah, look, it's finally a headache. It's a headache that he probably hasn't had during any stage up to now, that's for sure. But it's a really, really good one to have. Look, I would have said, you know, only a couple of games back, I would have said Josh Cullen was undroppable. I thought he was doing a fantastic job in the job description that he'd been given. You know, not setting the world alight, but just doing the ABCs really, really well. I think Hendrick has been really, really excellent. I think he's really, really stepped up. And again, I suppose it depends how much faith Stephen places in players Ireland performances versus their club performance or their lack of club performances, as is the case sometimes. But the one that's obviously come in to disrupt that then has been Horan. And he was really, really good last time round. Really, really good last time round. I just think Stephen might look at it as horses for courses kind of thing. Obviously, you're looking at the two challenges and they're very, 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 very different games. The requirements of what we're going to have to do in both games, obviously enough, you're looking at maybe having a third of the ball or less in the first one, and then maybe looking to have 2/3 of the ball or more in the second one. I think he will go Cullen Hendrick for the first one, and then I think Cullen could actually lose out. I think we could see Horan Hendrick for the second one. I think Hendrick is probably in the box seat to be the man that potentially starts the two of them.
You've kind of half explained it there, Shane, but so Harahan for Luxembourg and Cullen for Portugal. What are the specific attributes that differ between the two of them? If you take away the set pieces, what are the different attributes that differ that would lead you to that decision?
Yeah, I just think Cullen is that bit more defensively tuned in. I think it's his natural position. I go back to a game, I was going to say a year ago, it's probably pre-COVID now at this stage, so it was. There was an Irish 21s game in Tala against Italy, I think it was Owen, and he was playing in, it was the first time I'd seen him live, as in I was in the stadium at the time, and Josh Cullen, and I was so, so impressed with him. He's, go back a bit, he's that sort of Makaleli character that there's absolutely no problem whatsoever in me sacrificing my game. I just want to, I'll do the dog work here. I'll make sure I'm in the right positions as much as I possibly can. And he allows the rest to go and express themselves. Now, he can use the ball as well. That's not to say he can't use the ball. I just think his natural instincts are to try and sense danger and try and position himself to stop danger. And obviously with a team with as much attacking quality as Portugal, I think that's a big help. In terms of being more open and expansive, though, I think Horan's performance against Qatar was really, really excellent. It was good to see it. We hadn't seen that from him in a while. And I suppose, to be honest, we hadn't seen a huge amount from Jeff Hendrick in a while either. So it was great to see the two of them do so well in that game. And I know it's only Qatar, but I don't think we're in a position where we can call anybody only anymore. And their use to the ball was really, really good. Like, Horan, he's the guy who'll come and pick up a ball off of let's say one of the centre halves, let's say John Egan. He'll pick it up off of John Egan and, you know, he'll shape maybe to go down the left hand side of the field, and all of a sudden it's a big massive diag all the way out to the right to the Matt Doherty's. You know, Josh Cullen has a lot of attributes. He's not going to do that for you. He's going to go ping, ping and ping, and he might help you get there eventually, but it'll be after four or five passes, whereas Conor Horan can do that in one pass, and that could be the kind of thing that we need in that second one where the opposition are set up so defensively, you know.
It's really interesting.
He's the third midfielder. Sorry, Jimmy McGrath obviously played really well against Portugal in the first game. Comes out of the team, comes back in, keeps his place, and then does he keep his place, or does he look for somebody like Jason Knight, who's back and available? And what do you think there?
Yeah, I'd be going McGrath without a doubt, and even the way you phrased the question makes it interesting, because, you know, you're calling him a third midfielder. Is he a third midfielder or is he a second 10? I mean, technically, I think the setup will be 3-4-2-1 with your two 10s behind your nine. But I think the responsibilities of those two 10s, the roles they'll be asked to carry out, would be dramatically different. And that's why I think Jamie McGrath fits that profile so, so well, because I was going to say he's capable of playing two possessions at once. To be honest with you, I think he certainly in the Qatar game where you didn't have Adam Ida starting, he's capable of playing three positions in the one game, Gerard, because what he was doing was he was coming extremely deep in the build-up phase and giving us that extra body that we needed in the build-up phase and helping us get out, let's say. Then when we were progressing the ball over the halfway line, he was appearing in the more traditional number 10 position and picking up good little spots in between their midfield and their back line. But then on top of that, if you look back at the game, because Robinson likes to go wandering so much, and again, we'll touch on him a bit more in a minute, but because he likes to go wandering so much, he won't stay as the nine. And when he was going wandering, Jamie McGrath was appearing as our first forward player and almost in a traditional centre forwards position at the time. And I just thought the intelligence of his movement was really, really excellent. But the big thing on top of that is, because, as we say, we're going to maybe be backs to wall, is a lot of the time your more technical players and your more intelligent players, okay, they might be found a little bit for work rate. Jamie McGrath will not be found wanting on the work rate thing either. He really, really won't. So he'll get right in alongside the two lads, whichever two he goes with, when we don't have the ball. And I think, to be honest, actually, that was a little bit of an issue that we've had at times, is that sometimes the two lads can get slightly abandoned. And when the opposition shifts to one side, there's room then on that other side of them, something that Man City did incredibly well against United at the weekend. They exploit that little bit of space on the opposite side to the build-up. When we've only got two bodies in the middle of the field, we can be in trouble with that a lot. we see an awful lot of opposition teams getting an awful lot of shots from distance around the edge of our 18. Whereas I think Jamie will drop it in and make that a three when we don't have it. And then I think that gives us a hell of a better foot. I think he was brilliant the last day.
Yeah, he really was. Like, it's interesting just to kind of round up this midfielder section. When you talk about the fact that Harahan would be a better option than Cullen for the second of these two games, do you think Stephen Kenny would have been prone to trying Harahan out in that Qatar game anyway had Cullen been available? Because it seemed to me, Shane, that there was a little bit of opportunism from Harahan on that point. Now, you have to take your opportunities when they come your way, and as you say, he was excellent in that game. But it did feel like that Cullen was Kenny's guy up until that point, up until he wasn't available for that Qatar game.
Yeah, I think Horan definitely would have started that game. I just think right. The interesting thing is, would it have been Hendrick or would it have been Cullen that would have been sacrificed for him? Because Cullen is very, very much your designated six. Whereas, you know, Horan can play six, eight. I think, look, with his club, I think he's played 10 a hell of a lot, so he is. So there's a lot more flexibility in terms of the duties that you give him. So could those two play together? They absolutely could. They'd no problem with Cullen and Horan playing together. So it would have been interesting to see which of the two would have been sacrificed in the previous game. But I think he would have been given a roll of the dice anyway. I think I think Stephen would have been looking ahead and saying, okay, you know, it might be injuries, it might be a game plan, but we need more than just two players locked in here.
I'm sure it won't be as linear as this, Shane, but at the outset, you're basically saying Hendrick, Cullen, McGrath for Portugal, and then Hendrick, Harahan, McGrath for Luxembourg.
Yeah. Just, you know, in terms of the skill sets of the players, to me that would make sense. But look, I'm certainly not going to try and second guess Stephen. He's the one working on the training ground. He's the one seeing what's happening, who's in form, and all of that kind of thing.
Well, talk us through then how that's impacting on where you're thinking with regards to the attackers.
Yeah, look, again, I think so. Jamie, I think becomes a half and half. He's a midfielder when we don't have it. He's a second 10 when we do have it. And as I say, I think that's why he's ideal for that role. I suppose the big thing is what does he do with Callum Robinson? You know, he was outstanding as the floating nine against Qatar, almost a false nine to use the terms that the more fancy sides are using. But he was equally, if not better, in the previous game where he was playing as one of the two tens with Ida as the nine. And look, I think the Adam Elliott's last performance for us was his poorest to date, probably. Things just didn't go quite as well for him as they had been in previous games. But I think up till then he'd been really, really good. He, you know, in performances that weren't fantastic, he was regularly the one shining light. And I think he'll stay. So I think we'll see that McGrath, Robinson behind Ida. As I say, with McGrath and Robinson doing very different roles. Robinson very much given almost, I won't say quite a free role, but he certainly won't have as much defensive responsibilities as Jamie McGrath will. He'll be allowed to wander left, wander right, and that was what he was absolutely superb at, was just picking up pockets of space. I mean, the amazing thing was that he, against Azerbaijan, he played one half on one side of the field and he played the other half on the other side of the field when Horgan came off, I think it was at half-time. But in both halves, he was causing the problems on the opposite side of the field that he was nominally named to play in. And that's just down to really, really, really clever lateral movement. In other words, overloading. If he was on the right-hand side of the two tens, it was when he was popping up over on the left-hand side. I mean, you look at the goals. You know, they came from when he popped up over on the left-hand side, even though he was playing on the right. And then in the second half, they moved him to the right, they moved him to the left, and he actually started causing the problems on the right-hand side. You remember he put in one fantastic cross over there, and should have got a goal from over that side as well. So I just think he's shown an intelligence of movement, and I realise it's only a couple of games. Look, it's only a couple of games. We can't build him as the greatest thing since sliced bread just yet, but he couldn't possibly have impressed me any more in those two games. The one other thing on that as well is that the other reason that combination works so well is that, again, Ida's selfless running is really excellent. When Robinson wanders central, Ida has no problem running out and doing the flank for him, both with and without the ball. So I think the connection that those two players have going is a real, real positive for us over the last few games.
Is there any question about who's going to start at full back Now Seamus Coleman is fit, straight back in the team. Matt Doherty comes off the bench and plays left wing back at the weekend. Is that kind of the perfect scenario here? Or is James McLean getting in ahead of one of the lads?
I think that is the big... I would be fairly confident in being able to name the rest of the side. I think there is a question mark there, to be honest with you. For all his flaws, and I'm well aware of all his flaws, and I tend to get a bit of social media stick when I stand up for him. I like James McLean. I like what he gives us. I understand that there's limitations to it. But I thought he was very, very good across the course of those two games. He came into them probably under a serious amount of stick and getting a serious amount of grief. And I think you'd be hard-pressed for anybody to say that he wasn't, over the balance of the two games, right up there as one of our best. I think he'll be unfortunate to lose out. Matt Doherty is certainly playing, well, I suppose not getting a huge amount of chance with Spurs, but he looks to have a level of freedom and a level of confidence when he pulls on an Irish jersey that's way above what he's doing at Tottenham at the moment. So would you like to see him on the side? You would. And then, look, I'm just not going to make the call on this one because you'd be perfectly happy with any two of those three starting because they all offer you something different. Seamus just never, ever, ever lets you down. And he's so, so solid. And particularly in a Portugal game where you're looking at having to be dependable and having to be error-proof and all of that kind of thing, you know he'll give you all of that. And his leadership qualities are immense. So I think there's a headache, but a positive headache in terms of making a decision there. Rather than saying, oh, sugar, who do we play as our two? I think it's, best of luck deciding which one you're leaving out there, Stephen. Whichever two you go with, you'd be confident that they'll deliver.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be a range of exciting options in a number of different positions. So just one last question I had anyway on the team that you're looking at over the next couple of games, Shane, is just on Adam Eden. And you mentioned there his struggles in the last game for Ireland. That's totally down to the type of game, though, isn't it? That this sort of backs to the wall, needing that maybe a little bit more of a direct nature to our game against Portugal is what will bring Adam Eden into things because he was so good that night in Faro that is the thing that maybe should excite Ireland fans going into Thursday more so than being concerned about any recent performances in the green shirt.
Yeah. Look, he's your ideal player in terms of being under pressure and needing an out ball. He actually played in that game that I was singing Cullen's praises for the 21s, as I say, way back whenever it was, a year and a half to 2 years ago. And again, I actually remember coming away from it that night and there'd been a massive amount of hype around Parrott at the time, who was just kind of breaking through, and Aaron Connolly, who was just breaking through. And I think I might have actually wrote a piece on it at the time. I thought that Ida's performance that night showed, and Ida was well down the pecking order behind these two at the time. I remember thinking, no, do you know what? In terms of what we require from a centre forward, this guy is the one. This is the one who can do it because he's capable of doing all three kind of aspects of the game. Now, we'll come to the one that's missing a little bit, but he can drop in and show when you need somebody that when you're trying to find somebody's feet, he can drop in into little spaces there and say, yeah, fizz it into me here. And he's got a good touch and he takes it under control. He can also just pin his centre back because he's a good, strong boy and he can just kind of latch on and say, go on, put it up to my chest here. Or if there's a runner, put it up to my head and I'll try and win the flick on. And then he's also got the pace and the willingness to say, you know what, just put it down the channel and I'll chase it down there and I'll get us a throw in the final third. So I think he gives you so, so many options in terms of trying to get out of your own half of the field. Now, look, the one thing he's probably not is he's not an out-and-out natural goal scorer who's going to get you a huge amount of goals. But certainly for the Portugal game, he completely and utterly fits the bill. I think there might be a question mark over whether he then follows up and starts the Luxembourg one as well. I think there are options there that it might be mixed up, but for the Portugal one, I'd go as far as to say he's arguably going to be our most important player because if he can, revert back to that form that he has shown us during the campaign and get us up the field, that gives us a footing in the game. And if he gets us into the final third, well, now you're getting your corners, now you're getting your throws, now you're getting your free kicks. Whereas, if he's if he lets the head drop for any particular reason, or you know, life at Norwich is starting to get to him, and he's not at the top of his game, well, now, you know, how do we get a foot in the game at all? So I think he's arguably the most important player in the game.
And you've got Callum Robinson working off him as opposed to Aaron Connolly, which we had in Farrow. And no disrespect to Connolly, but Robinson's finishing at the moment and his end product is clearly far superior. So you're painting a pretty exciting picture here, Shane, for Thursday night, I'm not going to lie.
I hope this is not played back the following morning if things were to go wrong. But yeah, look, you'd have to be quite happy about it. And look, the game is a sellout for a reason. There's an excitement around this team at the moment. And it's not, you know, it's not, I won't say it's built on sand either. Like, you know, we're starting to show real signs of a team that are gelling, real patterns of play. I mean, against Qatar, I think in the Azerbaijan game, it was kind of, for me, it was all about Callum Robinson. I thought he was outstanding. But in the Qatar game after that, there were so many players who did really, really well. And there was a real tactical flexibility about us, the way the centre backs were stepping forward confidently with the ball, that this mad move that we saw two or three times with Shane Duffy appearing up at centre forward. The movement, even we started to see that thing that you see a lot in the Premier League at the moment, of the wing backs coming in very narrow and coming in through the centre of the field while either an attacker pulls out into the wide area that they've left or the centre back goes around them. We were starting to see loads and loads of things like that happen. Now, again, I think we need to wait until the Luxembourg game probably to see that kind of stuff again. It's going to be a very different game against Portugal, but there's real signs of a team taking shape and a proper game plan emerging. And, you know, you'd have to be reasonably confident and really, really hopeful that we'll see two positive results that'll send us into the new year with those confidence levels still very high.
Yep, absolutely. Just one last thing, Shane, before we let you go. One of the other big stories from Irish football over the last little while is the announcement that Ruud Doctor is going to depart as high performance director next month. We might get into this in a bit more depth with you another time, but just generally, what sort of candidate would you be looking for as his replacement, and what his replacement may actually bring to the table?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. I think the point has probably been made in a few places already. It was the first conclusion I jumped to when I saw the news that Doctor was gone was Aaron Shelburne very, very lucky that they got their business done nice and early with Damien Duff. I think Damien Duff potentially ticked a huge amount of boxes in terms of somebody who could have filled that role. A real knowledge of the domestic game here, a real idea of an idea that would fall in line with Stevens. Obviously, not that that's the be-all and end-all, you know, at the moment, but it does help if the person going into that role shares a lot of similarities in terms of how they want the game played, as Steven does. Look, I would show my biasness here, and I would say that I would like it to be an Irish man this time around. I think, look, you can't cut off your nose to spite your face if a fantastic candidate emerges from elsewhere, so be it. But I suppose I'm saying it as an Irish, sometimes what I was going to call myself a working Irish coach. I'm not quite that at the moment, but a sometimes working Irish coach. You want to see your own doing well, and you'd love to see somebody. I mean, there's been some fantastic technical director appointments at League of Ireland level over the last few years. You've got the likes of your Alan Caffreys and your Will Clarks, Ger O'Briens, guys like these who've done fantastic, really, really superb jobs at the clubs that they're at. Is it too much of a jump to jump from there right up to a role like this? Possibly. I think you will, naturally enough, I think you'll hear Brian Kerr's name possibly been mentioned in some quarters, and that's certainly worth looking into. It's certainly worth looking into whether Brian has more irons in the fire than anybody, whether he'd have the time to take on a role like that or have the appetite for it. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's worth somebody having a conversation with him. So, look, there's plenty of options out there. I do think one has got away, no doubt about that, with Duffer. It'll be interesting to see who they go with on. I don't have a definite for you on what direction they'll go there. It'll be interesting to see.
What's Doctor's legacy going to be? Is it essentially setting up the underage leagues and that civil war that's happened with the schoolboys? Is that, in years to come, will we point that was a difficult decision ultimately for the good of Irish football, or is there something else that we should be pointing to?
Yeah, look, depending on your opinion of Rude Doctor, you can make a perfectly plausible argument as to why his tenure was a failure, and you can make a perfectly plausible argument as to why his tenure was a success, depending on which angle you want to come from. I wouldn't always have agreed with the way he went about things, that's for sure. I remember having an argument with him in a room trying to think, was it in the Aviva that meeting was held, or was it in Abbottstown? Anyway, at the time, League of Ireland managers were brought in, and he was brought in, and there was conversations about things. And I remember one of the conversations was around the decision to go with full-size goals at, I think it was under 11 at the time, which was something that I was completely against. I had a younger brother who was a goalkeeper and was emerging, and I just thought it was insanity putting a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old into a full-size goal. But Rude's argument was football is about goals and we all want to see lots of goals, so let's make the goal bigger and then we'll get lots of goals. And I just we had a right kind of to and fro over that one on that occasion. He also was very, very strong on choosing one sport very, very early on, which is, to be honest, which is something I would have been, again, completely and utterly against. I love seeing kids play as many sports as they possibly can for as long as they can, certainly up until, you know, their mid-teens anyway. I think it develops their all-round abilities. But he seemed to want to funnel them into an elite path of soccer only from very early on. And yet, I would shove the two of those things to one side, lads, and I would say his ability to make what I always thought would be impossible, which was to wrestle the control into the direction of League of Ireland clubs for the underage development rather than the big schoolboy clubs. And look, there's, you know, there's plenty of people associated with the big schoolboy clubs who can argue why it wasn't a good move. For me, for somebody who's based outside of Dublin and who has a massive interest in a pathway for a young fella from Portlaoise and a pathway for a young fella from Kilkenny, and whose brother, my brother, lads, went up at 11. Like, he was travelling to Dublin three times a week at 11 years of age. He went up there for two years, under 11 and under 12, and, you know, great, you know, helped his progression and all that, and won DDSL titles and delighted with himself and all that. But as a person who, as a child who was growing, I mean, that was madness, really, when you look back at it. And if Doctor hadn't managed to make the changes that he's made, that would still essentially be the only pathway for a talented young player to try and make their way in the game. Whereas now it's so, so different. You know, you've got these really, really excellent systems at right across the country. The fantastic League of Ireland underage sides all playing against each other, and, you know, pretty much anybody who's got talent now, lads, can go into an elite setup. I know people don't like the word elite sometimes, but go into a strong underage setup that probably no more than a half an hour from their doorstep. And I think that's been hugely, hugely positive.
Shane Keegan, great stuff this morning. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, Shane Keegan there on the line, looking ahead to Ireland against Portugal. It is, of course, a Thursday night game this week. It is a massive fixture for Stephen Kenny, and then Luxembourg on Sunday night.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.